When we read our scriptures, when we read the Gospels, we're used to having things broken up into chapters and verses, but that's in the life of the church, a relatively recent phenomenon, only the last few centuries. For most of the history of the church, when they've read the scriptures, it's simply been one passage directly after another. And so when we come to a passage like this, we can tend just to read it in these well-defined, useful the ways that we are used to reading it. But in fact, we can sometimes miss the context, miss the point of a passage, unless we read it in the light of what has preceded it. So in the 9th chapter of John's Gospel, it's one of the stories that we have during Lent. It's the story of the man born blind who was healed by Jesus. And this prompts then these questions around the identity of Jesus. Who is this man? The question is asked. Who is this man who does these wonderful things, who heals and restores, in this case, this blind man, but who also does these provocative things? He provokes a response from the Pharisees and the leaders of the Jewish people because he does things that are non-conventional. He does things that beg the question, is he the anointed one? Is he the true shepherd? Is he the coming king that they've expected and longed for? And so Jesus begins by addressing this parable. And it's unusual in the Gospel of John to get parables. Most of the true parables are found in the other three Gospels, in Matthew, Mark, and in Luke. But John's Gospel has a different way of Jesus speaking. And so we see very clearly that the Pharisees don't understand what Jesus is saying when he offers them this discussion. First, about the sheepfold, this place of safety, this place of protection, and this echo of what the true good shepherd was meant to do, to protect his sheep, to look after them. Now, shepherds and sheep were common images there in the Middle East and certainly within the Jewish scriptures. We have the psalm that we had today, Psalm 23. We have the image of the great king of Israel's history, King David, who was himself a shepherd. We have the teaching and the writings of some of the prophets, especially in Ezekiel 34. We have this very long and extensive discussion about the failures of the Jewish leaders for not being true shepherds, for not laying down for not giving themselves in full service to the people, but looking after their own interests first. And of course, we've always had that complaint across the centuries about our own leaders and our own politicians, a sense of being more interested in their own interest groups rather than in caring for the common good. And yet, we see in this passage this deep and profound invitation to life. Well, we need to see, well, what is happening here? What is this invitation all about? And it culminates there in the 10th verse of this chapter, that I have come not like the thieves who have come to steal and kill and destroy, but I have come that you may have life and life in all its abundance, life to the full. And this is the invitation that we hear about Christianity. And yet so often when we think about Christianity, it's not this sense of this life in all its fullness, the life in abundance. We've often sapped Christianity of its power. We've often reduced Christianity to simply a series of rules and regulations, laws and morality. We think about it in terms of just, you know, the things that we have to do to ensure that when we die, we go to heaven and we avoid the other place. And yet Jesus is making this invitation so strongly and so powerfully to us to embrace this way of life. And he's offering this example of the gate and the sheepfold as this sign of life. Because there is that sense of that place of protection, that place of safety. And so the sense of being ushered together, of being nurtured, of being gathered in order to be protected. And in the ancient world, there would have been a low stone wall, most likely around that pen, and only that one place, one way of getting in and out of it. And so that gate was often the shepherd himself, that the shepherd would lay down over the entrance into that pen overnight to ensure that, no enemies, that no wolves would be able to, make their way in through that gate. And so that sense of being the one to protect them. But the gate was also there to provide that entry point into the wider world. The point of the pen wasn't just to be the only place that you would experience life, but that first place or that entry place from which you would then go into the pastures, into the world. And so often we've allowed so many things to steal us of our joy. And Jesus warns us about these lestos, is the Greek word, these thieves, these brigands, like Barabbas in the Passion narrative. He's described as being a lestos, a revolutionary, a person who's a zealot, who's trying to steal and take away their joy. But we are often our own lestos. We're often our own thieves. We often allow those regrets of the past to steal us of that same joy. We often don't, we think we're content within being in here within the sheepfold, when in fact the Lord is saying, no, this is just a place where you come, you know, sometimes to find that place of safety and refreshment. But real life happens outside. Real life happens out in the rest of the world, down by those flowing streams, down by those places of encounter, that it's in and moving forth from the safety of the pen that we find that invitation. We find where life truly happens. But so often we let those mistakes or those regrets about our family perhaps to also steal us and rob us of our future and our joy. So many parents and grandparents have lamented to me just their own sadness about the members of their family who no longer are part of the church community. And that's, you know, a real and profound sense of that sadness. And yet there is that more deeper and profound sense of that place of connection, that place of life, that we're all part of this sheepfold, or part of the image that St. Paul uses of being the body of Christ, part of this community, part of this communion of saints. We're all in this together. And even though your family may be in those irregular relationships, or even though they may have wandered away, even though they may have told you quite explicitly that they no longer believe in God, that they cannot anymore believe in God or believe in the church, and yet there is that sense of connection that they still have through you. And the power of our prayer, the power of our intercession for our family and friends is, you know, shouldn't be diminished or shouldn't be undermined. That power to give that witness to our family and friends, to continue to offer that life and that love that we receive. We're in contact with the divine. We're in contact with that profound spirituality. We're in contact with that love that is able to transform us. And that's often the point of connection that our family and friends have through us. So don't discount that sense. Don't allow their failures to undermine our own joy. Because our call is to indeed receive the life that happens in the midst of all the other things, that life is meant to be about this celebration of joy and wonder, that God is offering this and He's pouring Himself out for us, and where all that we need to do is just to receive that and to be washed and cleansed by that grace and by that life that the Lord continues to offer to us.